In this episode, I sit down with Jesse Hanley from Bento, popular email marketing automation service. Jesse's somebody I've followed online for a long time, and I love his story and kind of the ethos and the culture that he's building at Bento. We have wanted to chat for a long time, finally got on the mic, and this is not an interview. This is more like a co-host style conversation about stuff that's going on in my business, stuff that's going on in his business, stuff that's going on in our lives. Very timely. We're talking about tariffs and the current kind of economic situation. So as you're listening to this, as I'm talking, the economy is not in a great spot. What does that mean for us as businesses? What does this mean for us as entrepreneurs? How are we protecting ourselves and our businesses and our families from kind of the uncertainty in the economic world right now? I really love this conversation. This is one of the kind of the best co-host kind of conversations that I've had in a long time. Definitely have Jesse back on for part two here shortly. But in the meantime, I hope you enjoy this conversation with Jesse from Bento. Where are you from, by the way?
I'm Australian. I'm an Aussie. So okay. I grew up in Sydney and then did the nomad thing for a while and then ended up getting married to my Canadian wife in Japan. So that's why I'm now in Japan.
Oh, right on. Right on. Cool. It's funny. I talk to a lot of people who are like, oh, like, do you miss living in France? I lived in France for 5.5 years. And I'm like, yeah, every day. Every day I miss living in France.
why did you move back? Keith.
That's a good question. Like in hindsight, we should have stayed. But it was like four things all at one time. Like it was COVID. It was like aging parents and wanting to be here close to family. It was taxes. Which was like an unrealized worry for sure. Cause the market changed all of a sudden. And then it was, my daughter was in middle school. Like my oldest was in middle school and she was like doing physics and French. And it was just like, oh man, like it's kind of hard enough. Like, and then like, I don't even understand the question. And I'm like, I have my degrees in biomedical engineering. Like I know shit. It's just kind of like all that at one time. It was just like, I don't like living in France was like a really long vacation for us. Like it was really idyllic, kind of like you're talking about, like the cherry blossoms and the kids and all this kind of stuff. And like the wonderful part of it was kind of over for us in a way. For me, like my wife loved it. And she wanted to stay forever.
Were you in South France or North?
So like Southeast. Yeah. So like just south of Geneva, a little town called Annecy.
Oh, beautiful. Nice.
It was amazing. It would be like living in Tahoe if you're from the States. Like, you know, it's like mountains, lake, skiing, you know, all four seasons.
What was the affordability like in France? Just kind of like doing day-to-day life. Was it more affordable than the US? I've only traveled there as like a tourist and it was, you know, against Euro versus Australia. It was a little bit expensive, but what was it like living there as an American?
So like the part of France we lived in was like, aside from Paris, probably the most expensive. And it was quite a bit cheaper than living here. I live in New England in the US. So like between Boston and New York, everything is between 50 and 100% more expensive here.
Yeah. Yeah. We just did a trip back to Sydney. So go back and do the first trip back with a two-year-old to go see, all of our relatives and stuff.
Yeah.
And man, I was just blown away by the prices of some stuff, right? Like feeding a family. It was literally maybe like 10x the price sometimes,
right?
Versus Japan, right. And and I actually think I originally like started following you because I think I ran into a post about you living in France, and I was like, oh, that's super cool. Like I really like the stories of like software founders living abroad.
Yeah.
It was really romantic at the time. So yeah, I think that's actually why I started following you in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool, software founder France. I'm gonna go. Follow
likewise.
Along, 'cause I want to do something like that.
Yeah. Likewise. And I thought you were American. I don't know why I thought you were American. I knew you were living in Japan, but I was like, when you and I just started talking a few minutes ago, I was like, whoa, like that's,
my accent though, I think has like died over the years because I've been, I think it's almost like a decade abroad and I sell to so many Americans. And so like my accent I've had to like kill it. And I've had to like stop myself saying certain phrases just because initially when I started, Americans couldn't really understand me so much. So I've had to dial it down a little bit, but
cool. So I want to talk about a few things. Like I mentioned, like this is not an interview. Like I think I know you. I feel like I know you well enough from like our discussions on Twitter. I want to talk about AI. I want to talk about tariffs because like today, like I just saw a thing on Twitter, like
the Dow futures
open limit down, right? So third day in a row, like worst kind of days since 2008 probably. But first, I just want to hear like what you're working on right now with Bento. Like Bento, obviously email marketing system. I know you're building a CRM, super interesting, like kind of going up against mm-hmm. HubSpot, but like so what are you working on? And then like, what's the vision, I guess?
Yeah, the vision's, I'll start with that because the vision's pretty simple. So like my main desire with Bento is that I just want to work on stuff that I want to work on every single day. And I just kind of have continuously pulled on that thread. I don't have like a backlog of really like features that I pull on. I don't really do too much planning. It's very much like vibe coding, but I've been doing it for a while. I've been doing it since like the start of the company effectively. And I like working like that. I get stuff that pops up in the Discord. I get stuff from customers and like, that's how I build. Thematically, I am pushing in a direction where it's anything to do with email. So historically, we've been very good at marketing email. So sending broadcasts, automations, all that. We're very good at newsletters and sending large volume email at once. And we're starting to get better at like kind of two-way conversations. And so I'm like kind of pulling on that thread, right? So good at one-to-one email, good at one-to-many email. And then the next one is like, how do we get good at responding to the inbound? We've already got a product called Bento Chat, which has like a support inbox thing. And so I'm kind of trying to shove that into like a sales CRM function almost.
Yeah.
So that people can basically, anywhere that they send an email, they can kind of like do it within Bento. And I'm just trying to make those areas better for all my customers. And it's been interesting. Like the largest change that we made in like the last 6 to 12 months was like transactional emails. So, you know, we're a replacement now for Postmark. We're a replacement for SendGrid. And that's very sticky. And it's been really interesting. Like we're getting a lot of Laravel customers coming in. We're getting more Rails customers coming in. We're getting more of these like library customers. And it's been a very sticky product compared to marketing, which, you know, people can toggle off and all
sure.
that. But yeah. Transactional email, they're locked in once they're integrated. So yeah, I don't know. But then tackling so many different features, it's like just stuff pops up every day. And so instead of getting overwhelmed by like a lot of that, I just try and go, all right, like what are the problems for today? I'm going to try and like solve them and do a good job of that and then kind of like move on. And the product kind of like naturally gets built that way and actually feels quite nice. If that makes sense.
What is like the team look like? So you're obviously still building product. What's the rest of the team like?
Yeah, sure. And just to give like, I haven't really like mentioned this on like other podcasts, but to give like a bit of perspective, like revenue is at the 7-figure mark a year. So we're doing over 7 figs. It is just me as full-time employees. Yeah. I've got a guy called Zach who helps with like docs and stuff and a lot of our integrations. He's been like a recent addition like this year and he's just part-time. He like lives in Japan. So he's
cool.
Close by.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I met his kids down the road at like the science museum and stuff. So it's, yeah, anyway. And he's like one of those like, guys who's just great at every language. You're like, oh, dude, go write a Swift library. And then he goes, writes a Swift library. he's like, oh, I don't know. I feel like writing a Go library and then we'll go do that. So the guy's like a little bit unhinged. But he's been very cool. And then I'm working with the Fast Ruby team at the moment to do like a lot of code upgrades and stuff. That's honestly kind of it. So I use like the Fast Ruby team as like pro contract devs to help with
augmented, tricky
stuff. Yeah. And then I bring in people that are like experts when I need help. So it's like a guy called Andy who I like ping whenever I've got like Postgres issues. I'll find just pros, bring them in for kind of like a mercenary sprint, right? Like they're just hired to kill down an issue and then they leave. And that's worked pretty well. And I've also found that like, we'll probably go into this a little bit later. There's been like some hires that I haven't really needed to tap into because of a lot of the AI stuff as well. So for example, our business has like a compliance component to it. And a lot of companies will resolve that by hiring like compliance teams in the Philippines or Eastern Europe or whatever. And they're like literally looking at email templates nonstop. And AI has just like removed that need for us. Anytime an email template is saved in Bento, it's run against a whole bunch of like, you know, OpenAI checks and stuff. And then they get flagged and we kill the accounts, you know, and it's good. Like we'll get like what did we catch like last month? Last month we caught like someone, they signed up, connected their Shopify store, tried to create like a Facebook Thai phishing link, right? So it's all in Thai script. And the AI is like, kill this account.
That's crazy.
It works. And then with the WordPress integrations, right? WordPress sites obviously get a lot of like spam. And so we've got a transactional plugin. And if we notice, we've got this like escalation measure. So it's like, if we notice a link that is not a part of like the brand. So let's say Castos is like, can you connect the WordPress and someone puts in like a link in a form and something, we try and send that. We run that to the AI. The AI quickly checks that transactional email and then goes, ah, that's sus. And then we'll like flag it for review. And that catches stuff every day, right? So
yeah,
there's those components where they would be like hires and compliance teams, and we just don't need them. And I also, there's another person who works for me, I don't know if I mentioned this, Anya. And Anya is like my operations person. She's in Eastern Europe. And so she handles a lot of support whilst I'm sleeping. And so
nice.
If something, yep. You know, if there's a service issue, she'll call me or whatever. But yeah, that's more or less the team.
That's cool. So we're also like seven figures, like kind of low to mid seven figures. And we're a team of eight. Mm-hmm. And you know, one thing that I see is so interesting is like, by the way, amazing, right? One, just you, seven figures like that. This is, you know, you see this like Sam Altman said, there's going to be $1 billion, like one person company. And I think that you're like the little nugget of that, right? Like that's, yeah. but it's the model, right? It's that model and, you know, just more scale. We're a team of eight. Like I'm not a developer. So like have to lean on development quite a bit. But one thing that I think about, and it, like our team listens to this podcast, so this isn't a surprise, but like how much more effective can a team be with AI? And like how much more effective should they be? You know, I think this is kind of like what a lot of us are, and a lot of big companies are kind of saying, like, you know, the thing I always say is like, I think there's just going to be like 30% less jobs in a year, maybe, you know, like there's just going to be less jobs because you are more effective. So I need to hire a third less employees. And then I think about that from our perspective. Now we're already eight. How can that eight be 30% or 50% more effective? And like, where else do they work? Cause it's basically like you bring in a chat bot that's trained on your docs and you have less support inquiries. What does that support person do? Now they have 30% more of their time. I think this is kind of the math that we're all kind of like working through.
We're talking from like my perspective, it ends up being, I just don't hire. So you're in a position where like, yep. You know, it's like, how do I get more out of my employees? I think maybe that's not the right question. I think it's kind of, like how can you use AI just not to hire again? You know? So like,
yeah.
How do you get more growth out of your business and stay at eight and right. Like not feel pain when you're double or triple the size and you can yeah. still do that eight people. So I think that tends to be like more of the question because I find that like whenever I run into a problem, if I just wait a little bit long enough and maybe like feel a little bit of pain, stuff does get resolved, right? Like I remember yeah. the compliance thing was like a really big pain in the butt. And I was like, oh, can I really like run these large, you know, HTML blocks against OpenAI? Like that's not cost effective, is it? And then like, you know, costs get slashed down to a tenth and then slashed down again. And you're just like, okay, like we're getting to a point where you really can like abuse these and like effectively abuse these models, just hit them a whole bunch of times mm-hmm. and get what you want out of them. And then, yeah, even like my own usage of like Cursor, like I use that day-to-day coding. And in terms of like, am I more effective than I was before? I think like the answer is I'm probably the same, maybe a little bit faster, but I get tired a lot. I got a 2-year-old. Like stuff going on all the time. I've got family stuff. I've got personal stuff. Like just I get tired and like my brain's not functioning. But with assistance, I perform okay. And
yeah,
that's how it's kind of helped me. Where it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like sometimes I remember like when I. When Evie was first born and I was like tired or stressed or whatever, I just remember like looking at my computer and being like, I just can't work today. Yeah. And if I have those same moments now, I'm like, I can work. Like, you know,
yeah.
I got to be better at reviewing my code, but like I can at least explain what I want to do and then just tab my way through it. And, it's a different way to work, but it's helped tremendously just on like a personal level, just getting through the day. So that's where at least I find the gains.
I mean, that's interesting. I've not thought about it like this, but I think it has postponed us needing to hire a marketing person because I'm kind of sales marketing. And yeah, I have a pretty smart little marketing person that works with me 24/7 now, right? Like almost like to me, the biggest value is kind of like ideation. Like, hey, I want to do this thing. Help me kind of just get off the ground, right? It avoids the kind of blank page rule or problem. But then also like, I wrote this thing. What do you think? And it's like, oh, you didn't talk about this or this or this. So yeah, I mean, it's not a 10 out of 10. It's a 5 maybe out of 10, but that's kind of all I need just to have a little bit of support sometimes. And I'm sure I'm not using it for shit.
It was a 2 last year, right? It was a 2 last year and a 1 out of 10 last year. So
yeah,
I don't know. Like, and I think initially I was pretty skeptical. Like I was like, ah, this stuff's like, you know, I just don't buy into the hype. But then I started looking at my own usage. I'm being super hypocritical here because like I'm using the living daylight out of these tools on a day-to-day basis with Cursor. Like I really need to kind of like rethink my mental model a little bit. And I'm actually noticing this trend recently of people that are like the worst skeptical that are like kind of coming around to it. Even like, you know, all the MCP server stuff, like I initially didn't really understand how a lot of that stuff worked. And I was like, look at like another fad protocol or whatever. And then I'm seeing some of the things people are doing with them. And I'm like, okay, that's like, it's kind of pretty interesting. Like I saw someone, they like turned their whole code base into like a GraphQL, like node tree or whatever. And then they're able to like query it a lot better with an MCP server and all that. I'm like seeing cool use cases where I'm like, I don't know, like maybe I can do more and explore a little bit more in this area. But yeah, I don't know. It's moving fast.
So I want to ask from a personal perspective, how long have you been running Bento?
Five, probably a bit more than 5 years now.
Okay.
Maybe 5 years. Yeah.
Full time. How do you feel?
Since COVID, by the way. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So 5 years. How do you feel about like another 5 years or 10 years? You strike me as the guy that's like, hey, this is just cool. I'm going to do this, you know, forever. You're going to be Des Trainer, right? Like,
yeah, no, I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to be Des Trainer. I think slightly different ambitions. That'd be cool though. I'm pretty happy doing this for another 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Like I'm pretty chill. I mean, like my thinking's a little bit different though. I think before I ran this business, during COVID, I sold my agency and I like kind of exited a couple like little small SEO projects and stuff. And that plus some savings provides like enough economic security that I'm fine for a pretty long time.
Yeah.
So it changes how I think about like money with this business because I've had like a mini exit and I can, you know, with like all the tariff stuff and all that, I'm not personally I'm seeing my money go down and stuff, but I'm not deathly afraid. And I think that changes how I think about this business because I've already extracted capital. So for me, and I also live in Japan, so my cost of living is quite cheap. My expenses are quite low. And so I have low risk. And so my need to extract capital from the business is quite low. So yeah, I mean, most of the profits end up going back into like the market. Like it's because I'm not hiring, right? Like if I was in a bit more of like a growth mind, I could probably hire more people and put money on ads and really ramp it up. But I don't want to do that. Because I quite like my life and I quite like my way of living. And so I don't want to actually screw that up. I don't know. How do you think about it with Custos? How do you think about, I guess, cash extraction for the business?
Yeah. So it's changed over time for us. So we've raised some money, right? So we've raised like just under $1 million total. So we definitely have, you know, folks who we're accountable to. And so I can't just do, you know, whatever I want. I still own the vast, vast majority of the company. We raised money because for a long time I was like, hey, we're going to go super hard. We're going to spend all the money we have. We're going to go as hard as we can. We're going to hire. We hired a whole bunch. We didn't grow very fast. And so we had to fire a bunch of folks and that was super lame. And at this point it's like, okay, we're growing and we're profitable and I'm working largely on pretty much what I want to work on. The team is really solid. And for the first time, I'm kind of like, ooh, like, yeah, if we grow another million from here, I'll just take it home, you know? And like, I would have yeah. to like pay our investors or buy some of them out or whatever. But like, sure. but for the, because like I've all, going back to like some of the very first episodes of this podcast, I've been like, I want to build a business and sell it and make that money. And now, especially with the shit that's going on in the last few days, I'm like, man, imagine if you had sold a month ago and you put it all in the market two weeks ago.
That, but it's like you have a cash flowing asset that you actually have control on. And arguably like the returns on that asset are going to be larger than the S&P anyway, I would assume, right? Like your return on capital into Castles is going to be more than the S&P 500.
Yeah.
And so, especially right now, and that's also how I look at like Bento. It's like, yeah, I'd like take some, like it is better than all the cash that I have in the bank. Like why would I want to sell that? It provides me cash. It's got cash flow. I can control it. I can save money on expenses. I can try and, you know, ramp up sales to get more money. Like I can't do that. Like I don't really control the markets. I can change how the portfolio is kind of split, but I don't know. Like I look at what you have and I'm like, that's better than liquidity right now.
I think if I'm honest though, the challenge is like, so we're 8 years into Castos and I've said, you know, like there's the 7-year itch in marriage. I don't know. That's an American saying. Do you know, is this an expression?
I know it. It's an American saying, but I know it.
Okay. You know, I kind of had it last year. I was like, gosh, like, you know, we weren't growing as fast as we want. We weren't like super profitable. I was like, gosh, I want to do something else. I started doing some coaching. That's really fulfilling. So that takes up some of my time. But I think it's been this bit of distance that's helped me realize like, oh man, like the grass is just never greener. Like this is pretty awesome. Like, oh, if I'm, you know, I talk about like the ideal SaaS business. It's like 3 degrees off of what I have probably, you know? Sure. And like you have shit that I don't have to deal with, like email deliverability and spammers and getting woken up in the middle of the night. Like knock on wood, I haven't been woken up in the middle of the night in 6 years, probably.
I'll touch all the wood around my house.
I know. I got all the stuff and we have, you know, but like we have a pretty chill, you know, problem that we solve for customers. And it's a fun industry. Like, sure. Could we charge more money? Could we have more expansion revenue built in the business? Yeah, we don't. But like the rest of it's pretty nice. And I think, dude, if I'm honest, I think the biggest reason I haven't done something else is I don't know that I could do better than this.
You know what? I'm not even going to push back on that. That could be true. I also have that same fear. And I think it's probably better to pull on this thread a lot longer than like, I don't even know what I would do. Like I've thought about it sometimes like, oh, you know, like I've got some really challenging problems. I like doing those problems. If I want more problems, maybe I could raise money and find more problems. Like
you would definitely find more problems if you raise money.
Yeah. So I can actually create more problems to solve if I want to. But I think like trying to practice a little bit of like being content and just being like okay with what you've got and what you're trying to resolve. I think that's a lot easier to say when things are going well, though. So I think like if both you and me faced a lot of like stagnation or even like a decline in revenue, which you know, who knows if there's like a broader recession or whatever, if that like impacts us on like a larger level. But yeah, maybe there might be a vibe shift there. But then I would argue that like, it's probably better solving a lot of those issues within the same business than trying to start again. Like those first few years, I didn't know what I was doing. And like Bento wasn't even anywhere close to what it is today, right? So yeah. I don't want to do that again. I actually really don't want to do the discovery phase again. And I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about the kind of broader market because, yeah, like we're recording this. It's April 6th, right? We just had the worst 2 days in the Dow since 2008. Futures open kind of limit down for tomorrow. So it's not looking good. We're buying. We got some dry powder. So my wife said to me the other day, she's like, so are we going to buy some of this? Like, I was like, yeah, let's do it. I said, let's wait till Monday because I don't think it's getting better.
No, I think it's going to get, I think we're going to see something, but I mean, what is it? Jim Cramer, that guy, he, you know how people do like the inverse Cramer, whatever he says, he said it's going to be like another Black Friday. So who knows? We might actually be up on Monday.
Gracious.
So we'll see.
But like, okay, so none of us have crystal ball, but like, what are you thinking about with this? Like there's the tariffs and like, you know, I think it could be kind of this like multi-headed kind of storm, right? Of like the tariffs, the economy not being great anyhow, interest rates are high. And then like the fear of AI, like what do you kind of think about for the next kind of 12 months?
Yeah, sure. So the thing that I think about most is about like the psychology of just my customers. And so for me, what I know will be true is that they'll all care a lot about costs. They're gonna start looking. It doesn't really matter. Like this happened. I actually noticed this when all the Doge stuff started happening in the US. I got so many like tickets about like price optimization. So I've actually seen this for a while. It's just like all my customers looking to cut costs, which I don't care. Like I'll help them and I'll figure it all out. But I noticed a drastic increase in I got to cut down my bill. My bill's too high. Da 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 da. Or hey, I'm migrating from Klaviyo because the costs are too high. So it benefited me in some ways, right? So there's a bit of a, and that's when I slapped like, are you migrating from somewhere else? Like kind of call to action on like, so that's how I kind of took action on that, which is like, I'm going to try and scoop some of this churn from like other providers that aren't going to move as fast on pricing or maybe not be so flexible. But whenever this stuff goes on, regardless of how it impacts everyone on like a financial level, I just know that everyone just starts thinking about cost cutting and SaaS and cutting away SaaS line items is very easy. So, you know, when you're going through there and you're like, cool, I can cut off my email provider and save $1,000 a month, done. I'm going to switch to some self-hosted thing. I actually don't really care about what the results are of that. And so you see some of that. So if you're a product that's kind of been positioned for like a, you know, less cost, what is it? Like less like cheap provider type thing. And you're more like a value-based high-end-ish.
Yeah.
You'll probably feel a lot of pain, I think, in that type of positioning coming into what's going to come. And then that will probably be true, at least for the next year, I think. Because that's all America's talking about is like cutting costs or trying to restructure the debt. I don't know. Thematically, I think that's what's going to happen with customers in at least in the US.
Yeah, cool. Okay. And I think like fair to say, like if that's happening in the US, the rest of the country kind of largely will have similar themes, right? Whether it could, because it's a different, you know, flavor reaction of it, but it's similar,
sure.
Similar kind of ideas. Okay. So
globally, I think, yeah.
Thought exercise for both of us. We do not currently have a free tier, but
one I don't want to do it.
One of our competitors does. So there is currently an entirely free podcast hosting platform. It used to be called Anchor, owned by Spotify now. And one of our competitors called Buzzsprout has it's a weird like rotating usage-based trial. Like they basically just keep the most recent 3 episodes and they get rid of everything else. Right. That's their free plan. Cool. Weird. But I'm sitting here saying like, okay, we kind of like you, we have hard costs, but we kind of know what those are. Could we design a free tier that is limited? I think support is one of the biggest concerns we have. So we probably wouldn't allow people to integrate to WordPress because that's 80% of our support burden. But like, could we somehow lean into this cost concern? Offer a limited free plan that is essentially our cost to acquire a customer. Like what our hard costs would be.
Are your hard costs actually hard costs or are they hard costs just mostly support? Like for customers, like I knew you've got bandwidth costs, but like, is that, you know, like the reason I asked is because I've got email costs, right? And when I was doing, up until a year ago, I thought those were hard costs for me. And then I started running my own email service. And then now I don't have those hard costs. I know you've got bandwidth costs, but it's kind of like, well, what if those didn't exist? And like, how could you at least minimize them or reduce them? And are they like technical? Are they technical? Could you turn that into a technical challenge? Get your costs as low as possible. And then it becomes a possibility. And then you also have to stack on like, all right, well, there's going to be a support burden, which is my biggest fear. Like, I don't want to offer a free tier and have my Discord flooded with, you know, just very low quality stuff and take, you know, kill the vibes. But it's like, all right, well, are there kind of constraints that you can apply to those free users that means they don't actually ever interact with support? And if they want support, you charge for it, a la Azure, AWS, all that. That's why they do it, right? If you want to talk to someone, you got to pay. So, I don't know. How would you do it? Like, is that a possibility to reduce costs?
So I think we could. Yeah, totally. I mean, so we our object storage is on Backblaze, Cloudflare is our CDN, and AWS is kind of our servers and database and stuff. So that would need to get better. I know, like, we've briefly looked at, like, can we build our own CDN? Like, you know, can we have our own hardware and all this kind of stuff? I think at our scale, from every one of our developers that I've talked to, like, it doesn't make sense yet. I think what I would do is I would just try free. If it works in converting customers and they stick around for a while, then you would solve the cost problem. But I wouldn't solve the cost problem by building our own CDN or something. Ahead of figuring out if it works. That's kind of like premature optimization. The biggest thing I worry about is, like, are they just going to be low quality customers? Because like, if someone comes for free, we're like at the higher end of our market right now from a price perspective. And I know there are lower price providers in our space that have much higher churn because they're attracting, you know, kind of lower quality hobbyist customers. So that's my biggest concern, but it is definitely something I've thought about from like a growth perspective.
What's in terms of your customer, like, I guess, deal flow, is that predominantly people migrating, or is that predominantly people that are like starting and they just happen to get bigger? Like, what's the bulk of your revenue coming from?
So it's about 80% are new podcasts.
80% are new podcasts, which would the free thing would make sense in that regard, right? Mm-hmm. Like, unlike Bento, where it's like all of our revenue comes from migrators. Like the $30 plans don't. It's pretty rare people like get significantly larger. Like I can name a handful of customers that went from a $30 plan to like a $500 a month plan.
Yeah.
But all of our revenue is like moving from Klaviyo, moving from MailChimp, moving from CustomIO, moving from this, moving from that. So
interesting.
It's very different. It's very different to you, where I think someone signs up, they start a podcast, and well, it took off. So now they need that history. Now they need all that. Which you said your Buzzsprout had like that that like limited history kind of thing, which I guess kind of plays into that, right? Like you it actually makes a lot of sense in that context. So it's like you start a podcast, you do episode one, no, it's not for me. You abandon. Right. They're dead to you anyway, right? But if they get to podcast five, probably want 1, 2, 3, and 4 to still be there, and they're probably willing to pay there. So it actually kind of makes a lot of sense. Not weird that I said it was weird before. It's not weird. It actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's, I just have never heard another thing like that. Like you see, like Wistia has just a usage limited trial, like first 5 videos free, first 3 videos free, but not if you publish a 4th one, the first goes away, you know, like a first in, first out kind of thing. So interesting that you get a lot of customers from competitors. Are you all, like you mentioned, like you're doing kind of switching from X kind of campaigns. Are you doing anything like proactively to reach out to those folks, or is it just kind of like word of mouth and organic stuff to attract them?
Yeah. Email marketing is kind of like interesting, just email in general. It's like, it's very sticky. People need to have a moment in their lives where they have extreme frustration. And then when they hit that, and like that frustration could be like they log into ActiveCampaign, they go to the automation and build, and they go, it's so slow. Like, why is this always so slow? And they're clicking around and they're like, this sucks. This is bad software. And then they go, hey, like I saw Jesse on Twitter, or I heard Bento on, you know, the Mostly Technical podcast as an ad, or I saw it, whatever it is. Once they hit that pain, their brain switches to what are the alternatives? And my only job is to be in that alternative category in their brain. And so we created like a Laravel integration like this year, and then I basically sponsor Laravel things, and then Laravel customers know that we're an option for them. And then that's kind of like, that's all I really do for marketing. Same with like WordPress. I've sponsored, we did a WordPress plugin. We upgraded it. We made it nice. It's very hard to support, like, as you know. But I just sponsored some WordPress people. And as you get more and more, it kind of compounds, right? And then Yeah. You get like a WordPress influencer, and then they say, like, you know, their followers that are agencies or developers go, oh, what's such and such using it? And then they look into it and they start using it too. So that's kind of like how we do it. It's organic, but I just try and like plant seeds in places. So either that's sponsorships or ads or talking to people or following people and engaging. It's not too complex.
So to me, sponsoring Laravel is a bit separated from who I imagined your ideal customer to be. So Laravel,
I just recent.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But to me, like, your customers are, you know, digital marketing folks, not developers. Is that like they're running an e-commerce store, they're running digital product company, or they're running a SaaS? I guess in that case, like, they would be your customer.
So it's like, yeah, it's kind of more, if people predominantly sell things online, they can use Bento. And it really is that broad, right? Like, you sell software, you can use Bento. The e-commerce store that uses Shopify, they sell stuff online, they can use Bento to sell more of that stuff or send their emails. Digital products business that's selling educational PDFs on WordPress, they can also use Bento to send emails and earn some more revenue and stuff. So it's pretty broad. Like, we've got like they got like a exact match domain, so I can't really like mention them without asking. But like they do surveys, large scale surveys, right? Okay. And they use Bento to send their daily kind of survey emails to like millions of people. So it really is kind of all over the place. But that's going to be true with like any ESP software, so any email service provider. Like, they really are serving everyone. And then mostly your marketing is kind of just funneling in those pools of people. And each ESP tends to be a better fit for certain businesses. And so ActiveCampaign is really good for real estate agents and people maybe 10 years ago. MailChimp's really good for someone that just started their business on Wix or WordPress or somewhere where there's a first party integration with that, and they're just sending out their basic stuff. But then once they want to get a little bit more complex, or they've got a very large list, they're suddenly paying, like, MailChimp's more expensive than Bento now, much to my surprise.
Much to my surprise,
it's like more expensive than Bento. So people save costs and get a little bit more advanced features coming to us. It's pretty broad, man. It's a pretty broad range of customers.
You know, so we are too. We're horizontal. We're not podcast hosting for anybody. It's for everybody. And I quite like it. Like, we have looked at niching down vertically a few times, but choose not to. And like, kind of was solidified by like a chat I was having with Laura Roeder. Do you know Laura?
Yeah, I don't know her personally, but I've followed her stuff since Meet Edgar was like a big inspiration for me.
And I used
it. I was a customer.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So she was kind of like, you know, you can niche down like by persona, or you can niche down functionally. And so that's like what we're looking at now, is like podcast hosting to make you money, right? So like monetization is the kind of angle that we're leaning into, because that can mean a bunch of, that could be real estate folks, that can be, you know, the guy, the D&D guy, right? That can be, you know, kind of whoever. I like that better, because it always seemed like, oh gosh, podcast hosting for coaches and consultants was like unnecessarily limiting us. And it, like, functionally, it's not, right? It's not podcast hosting for coaches and consultants. It's like literally, you know, for anybody. So it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But I think leaning into it.
I think for you and me, though, we're both kind of building utility tools, right? Like, at the end of the day, Bento sends emails, and like, Custos is a utility, your podcast hosting. And it's kind of up to the customer how they're going to use that tool, whether they're going to use it as a internal podcasting tool, or they're going to use it as like a external marketing thing, or they're going to use it like whatever it is, right? But we are actually selling like a hammer, and there's many different customers of a hammer. And I think there are definitely some tools where, yeah, sure. Like, I think of ZenMaid with Amar, where he's doing appointment scheduling and stuff for maids. Yes. like, and he's very good at it. And it's an amazing business. I caught up with him in Tokyo. He's a great dude. And with that business, yeah, niching matters, right? But then I actually see him recently going against like another competitor on Twitter. He's just like, you know, going at him. And that one broadly markets. So it's appointment scheduling, but it's like a more broader scope of who they're going after. And I think that company captures maids a little bit. And I think maybe even he's starting to think maybe I go a little bit broader. So yeah, I think there is general advice in like SaaS that, yeah, you should go after like a specific niche and all that. But I think you've got to work out like, what is my product actually? Like, am I really just serving this market? Am I just serving agency owners? Is it hyper opinionated software? If it's not hyper opinionated software, then you're a utility and then you have to go broad and you've got to make sure that your software does better at almost being like simpler, easier to use for like a large amount of people, which you and I think have to do. So yeah, I think a lot of people get confused. Am I a utility or not?
It's interesting. Another way we have talked about it is there are tools that you want to spend time in and there are tools that you don't want to spend time in, right? So like maybe an email tool. I don't know which one you guys are, but like a CRM to me is a classic. Like you want to spend time in there. Like I need to spend time in Notion every day doing stuff. Our customers don't want to spend time in our product. They want to upload an episode and it go out. And the next week they come and look at their analytics maybe. And like, they just want it to be totally transparent in between then. And I think that's just knowing which one of those you are is interesting. Like how kind of in your customer's face you want to be, or you like you kind of position yourself is an interesting thing to think about. You guys probably want your customers in the tool all the time, right? Like, do you think about that?
There's like, but there's different customers have different needs. So it's like our broadcast product, we have daily senders, weekly senders. And if that process doesn't feel good, then that's not good. and there's lots of little stuff. Like when you send a broadcast, you're emailing often all your customers, right? And if a broadcast is wrong, then, or there's a broken link or something, there's like extreme pain. And so with that, like I've focused a lot on trying to make, all right, like for that person that's sending broadcasts, how do I make it least painful for them? So we've got like a batching feature. So you can say, hey, I got a list of 100K. I'm going to send to 1,000 people an hour. It's going to go over a few days, but who cares? At any point in time, you can pause the broadcast and edit it and then resume it later, right? So that takes out all the stress of all my large senders. So that's for that product. But then if I've got someone that they're like an e-commerce store, they set up their automations, they hate marketing, sending broadcasts, then they basically set up their flows and never log into the product again.
Yeah.
So... Or is it SaaS? It's like they listen to a podcast and go, I should be doing more email marketing. They sign up to Bento. They set up their automations for onboarding, write 5 emails and like let it.
Yeah.
They just let it rip. So it depends on the segment of who are the daily users and who are the like annual users. And both get value out of the product and both can find a return. It's just, it's different.
Yeah. It's refreshing to hear you so kind of open and unopinionated about kind of how people use your tool because, like I don't hear that a lot. You know, it's you need to be vertical, integrated, opinionated kind of software. And I just don't think all of us need to be. Giving everybody like, who's listening, grace to just kind of let it go, I guess.
Yeah. But I also think it's like you need I really enjoy having a connection with my customers. Like I've got the Discord server. I've got customers that are in there. I'm really intimately involved in seeing how people use my software. And I see, and I think a lot of founders don't actually know how people are really using their software because they're not really talking to them or they don't have like a constant pulse on that. They just kind of, they're looking at logs. They're maybe doing some SQL lookups. You know, it's like, oh, how many broadcasts were created in the last day? Like they're not talking to customers. They don't know that, you know, Sally is stressed at her job sending these broadcasts to 500,000 people every week. And then when you drill in, like, why are you anxious about that? Then you can build pretty cool features to resolve that for them. And then everyone else benefits from that. But I think you need to, have pretty intimate conversations with your customers to work out like what they actually need. And it's a fun way to build.
Yeah. I think that's a cool place to wrap because like one thing, taking us all the way back to the AI thing, one thing I'm hearing over and over from very smart people is like the moat for a lot of businesses is community and brand. And, I don't do Discord, so maybe I would check out your Discord server, but I can't. But yeah, like I think it's a good thing for us all to think about. It's like, how are you forging connection and community with your customers and people in your industry? Because yeah, like product is easier than ever. Marketing is easier than ever. AI is breaking down the barriers to all of these things to where like the connection we have with our audience or our customers or our like customer base is like so important.
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree. At the end of the day, we're all just building CRUD apps. So it's really just the branding and the community that differentiates it. I think just because we're more true now than ever.
We're a giant S3 bucket. That's all we are.
Basically.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, it was good to catch up. Bentonow.com. So folks who want to kind of check you guys out.
Yeah, man. This is really enjoyable. This is really, really fun.
Yeah. Thank you.